The UC Climate Solutions Channel, an online hub for the latest research and best practices from the University of California to address the impacts of climate change. See how you can help at uctv.tv/climatesolutions.
Okay, my name is Alex Hall, and I am from UCLA. I am a climate scientist. My expertise is in climate modeling and climate change. And there's going to be a lot of discussion today about reduction in carbon emissions, which is obviously extremely important. One of the things that makes climate change very challenging is that not only do we have to work on reducing carbon emissions or eliminating them, but we also have to think about climate change adaptation, because we are still emitting carbon. In fact, all of us probably emitted carbon to get here today. And so climate change adaptation is really also very important. And for California, one of the key climate change adaptation challenges lies in the Sierra Nevada, which is where we get about 60% of our water resources. And I'm sure many of you are aware of some of the challenges associated with that. So that's the project that I am working on for this program. Now, there are a lot of impacts of climate change that that you're familiar with. A lot of them are listed here. The issue that we're trying to address in the center that I run at UCLA is that a lot of these issues have been identified, and they've been studied at continental or global scales, and that they're understood in that sense. But when it actually comes down to what happens to in neighborhoods, in particular ecosystems, we really don't have a very good handle on how climate change will impact the world. And so our goal is to bring this information down to regional scales. Here is a swath of Southern California, and I'm draping on top of this the resolution of a global climate model, which is typically 100 kilometers or so in resolution. And you can see that there's a lot of variation in topography, and there are complex coastlines within one particular grid box of a global climate model. So we might, if you look, for example, in this particular grid box, a global climate model would represent this with one single number, one single temperature, one single precipitation value. But in reality, there's a lot of spatial variation in those numbers across this landscape. And so the global climate models are not appropriate tools for looking at climate change impacts. And so what we have been doing is bringing this information down to a regional scale. And so here is an example of a regionalization of a global climate model solution that we have done for the Los Angeles region. And the way that we do this is by using the exact same tools that global climate models use, the hydrodynamical equations of the atmosphere, the thermodynamical equations of the atmosphere, the land surface moisture and energy balances. And we do this at very high resolution over a limited area. And in this case, we were looking at the Los Angeles region. And you can see that we bring the climate change data down to a regional scale with these techniques. So this is a 2-kilometer grid, and if you're familiar with the neighborhoods in Los Angeles, these are actually the neighborhoods in this particular part of California. Now, this project, as I mentioned, is focused on... I wanted to show you one result from this first. For the LA project, we looked at a lot of different aspects of climate, and this is one example of that, which is the changes in the number of extremely hot days in Southern California. This is just showing you the green is the current number of extremely hot days, and then the red bars are showing you how much those numbers increase in the future in the middle of the 21st century. And you can see that there are very different impacts across the region. Some neighborhoods have very small increases in the numbers of extremely hot days, and others have very large increases. And that's because climate change has a very differential impact across the landscape. There are some areas that are much more impacted than others. And that's the power of these regionalization techniques that we have been using. So for this project, we want to do the same thing, but for the Sierra Nevada. And as I mentioned, the motivation for this is that our water resources for the entire state are really coming mainly from the Sierra Nevada. About 60% of the resources come from that part of the state. And there is a massive water resource infrastructure that we have created to bring the water from the Sierra Nevada to areas where there's human demand for water. The agricultural regions of the Central Valley, of course, also urban areas. And so when we do this high-resolution modeling over the Sierras, we can actually do watershed-specific analyses of changes, impacts of climate change on different parts of the region. So, for example, the water that we are enjoying today comes from the Tuolumne River through the Hetch Hetchy system, and these are these are just images that are showing us where the water actually comes from. And with the high resolution climate modeling over this area, we can actually make projections of the changes in water resources in this particular watershed, and we can talk about those changes to the people who are actually experiencing those impacts. We can connect urban areas to their watersheds, which is one of the strange disconnects in California is that people in urban areas don't actually have much of a sense of where their water actually comes from or how it'd be impacted by a changing climate. Here is just an overview of this project. On the left is the actual domain of interest. This is where we do our high-resolution climate modeling. And it stretches from the northern Sierras to the southern Sierras. And we're doing projections of climate for two time slices. One is a mid-century time slice, 2041 to 2060. And another is an end-of-century time slice, 2081 to 2100. The first time slice is meant to be very focused on climate change adaptation, what is actually in store. The end-of-century time slice is meant to help us talk about the benefits of climate change mitigation. And so that's something that's very important for us to think about. We're doing two scenarios of greenhouse gas concentrations. One we call the business-as-usual scenario. That's the one that we're on. And the other one is mitigation, and that's where the countries of the world come together, much as we hope they will, through the Paris Climate Agreement, for example, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And we're doing analyses of warming, snow loss, shift and timing of spring runoff, changes in drought severity, changes in soil moisture, among other variables. And I can't share with you the results now. I don't have time, and I also am not ready to talk about it. But I can tell you one thing, which is that significant changes in all these metrics are inevitable because we are continuing to emit carbon and will no doubt continue to emit carbon for some time. But there are truly dramatic changes if we don't reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the coming decades, especially by the end of the century. And one of the important contributions we would like to make to the conversation about climate change is to provide information about the benefits, again, of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. This conference is about innovation at smaller scales and then scaling that up. But government is also a partner in this process, and we have to keep support for policies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to enable innovation in the private sector and at the universities. And so these are important. This is important information to have out there. I've heard rumors, for example, that California's cap and trade program is in danger. And so we need to keep these arguments out there. All right, so this project that I just described is actually funded by a foundation. The Climate Champion Funds support the outreach component of the project, and so I want to talk about that piece of it. So first, we're scientists, so we're publishing these papers in scientific journals. And it's very important that we have peer review of the methodology and the findings. But in parallel with that, we're undertaking a process of stakeholder engagement. So we are, for example, engaging with the Sierra Nevada Business Council, the National Park Service, other stakeholders in the Sierra Nevada to understand implications of the work for water resources, forests, and recreation, just a couple of examples. And then the result of that interaction will be a public report that will synthesize the findings of these projects. We're anticipating about 5 scientific papers coming out of the project. There will be a public report that will synthesize those papers and for broader consumption. And then we are also going to be producing some online education material videos and visualizations to try to communicate the project to the broader public for people who don't engage in information by reading reports, which is, I think, a larger fraction of the population. We're also doing media outreach. There will be a media release of a public report. We'll also be preparing articles and op-eds that will help also to bring visibility to the project. And we will also be doing public and policymaker outreach. There are a number of public talks that we're planning and also presentations to policymakers. So that, in a nutshell, is what we're up to.